Elton and John's La Liga Weekly, where this week the headlines were dominated by two goals from Fati, while over at Barcelona, Ansu also scored a double. Yeah, I know I've used it before, but recycling is good for the environment. We almost got Diego and Luis together on the pitch. I'll do the fighting, he can do the biting, said Costa after the game. Diego, don't go, just get good again. Anyway, crisis club Barcelona scraped a narrow 4-0 win over Villarreal. Coming out! Coutinho started, assisted and nutmegged the referee, which is worth €140 million of anyone's money. Elsewhere, shock news, Real Madrid beat Betis with the aid of a red card, own goal and a penalty. Actually, I've had various requests to rip into Real Madrid over the VAR, but actually, I don't mind any of those possible offsides being allowed. If you have to start drawing coloured lines and trying to remember your trigonometry from school, then it's time to just let the attackers attack. In fact, let the players play 10 minutes of added time in the Eibar Athletic match with nobody injured. In other breaking news, Valencia are a mess. Iago Aspas rescues Celta Vigo and Elche are indeed bottom of La Liga. And that didn't take long, did it? Right, everybody, we do have some business news, everybody. We have a Patreon page. So please, if you can afford it, if you've got a few quid spare each month, go on and give us some money. Patreon.com, LTEL is what we've called it. So it's Patreon.com, LTEL. And we'll soon be adding extra content on there. The podcast will stay more or less the same, but there'll be more stuff on the Patreon page soon. So go on there and support us, please. That would be nice. And we will continue to talk about Spanish football as often as we can. In fact, more often than we are currently. Right, Terry, where should we start? I think the big story, wasn't it? Luis Suarez, not just him, but the whole Atletico performance, thumping 6-0 win over the erstwhile leaders Granada.
We wonder what we're going to expect. First of all, we're looking at it and thinking, will he be in the squad, having only turned up at Atletico on Friday? The move was finally confirmed. So I was interested to see. I didn't think for one second he would start the game, but pleasantly surprised, you know, in this day and age now where, you know, new players are signed by clubs and they have to acclimatise for a couple of weeks, even if they're moving from one club to the other in the same country. So pleasantly surprised to see him on the bench, and it was set up perfectly for him to come on and show us exactly, you know, what he is all about. Nothing surprises us about Luis Suarez. He's been in Spain for 6 years now. We've seen him at Liverpool before that. We know he is one of the best finishers in world football. But for him to come on and have that impact, it lifted the place. I mean, it really did. I mean, you could see the other players were pleased to have him on the pitch, have him in their squad, in their team, and he lifted them. I mean, they were playing well enough before that. Costa, you mentioned in the intro, he was looking lively. And maybe he does feel there's genuine competition for his place now with Suarez. And it just appeared to give everybody a lift. And I mean, the strength of their win against Granada was down to the fact that they were good for an hour or so anyway, and they had a healthy lead. And then you look at the subs that they brought on: Suarez, Marcus Llorente, Thomas Partey, Vitolo and Thomas Lemar. I mean, to bring that on against a team like Granada, who were already suffering at that time, I think it was 3-0 by then. Granada have already, you know, done so well at the start of this season, but they've had a couple of Europa League qualifiers as well. And once they were 3-0 down and that mob come off the bench, it was going to end in tears for Granada. So it was a tough result for them, but an emphatic win for Atletico that I really enjoyed watching, you know, the talent on display. I know it's only their first game of the season, but it does make them, when you look at that, the form they showed against a team that's been playing well, against a good team, and how they thrashed them in the end with the squad that Simeone has now. There were no excuses, John, for them not being in the title race this season.
So how important is keeping Diego Costa? Because I've said I'd like, you know, we all want to see them together not quite the comedy value, but for the value of seeing those two tremendous aggressive players playing together. Do they need to keep him? Obviously, there's a financial drive to not keep him, to let him go, and he's been linked with various moves away. How important, how much stress would you put on keeping Costa?
I think it's really important they do. Because they had two last season, Morata and Costa. And, you know, they've got a lot of other strikers, but not in the mould of a traditional, you know, focal point of the attack. a physical presence. I know Suarez isn't as big as Costa, but he plays with his back to goal. He can hold defenders off. He holds the ball up. So if Suarez was to get injured and they've let Costa go, then it would really hamper their chances. So if they can afford it, you know, why not be greedy and keep the pair of them? I mean, they're both at an age now where they could share the playing time. They can play together, of course, but, you know, both in their 30s. And we haven't seen Costa at his best for a while. He hasn't physically his best for a while. So it would be the ideal job share. And they're the perfect strikers for Simeone. I mean, even if it's just one at a time, those two are, you know, should be a real asset to Atletico. But I have to mention the performance of João Felix. Up until Suarez come on, he was the star of the show. Made a goal, scored a goal, showing all his skills, great passing, able to beat defenders easily. It was a fantastic performance from him to carry on from his sub appearance against Red Bull in the Champions League. So that was pleasing to see. Then Suarez comes on and tops it all off. Marcos Llorente came on, looked sharp, lively, scored within a minute, made by Luis Suarez. The whole thing just looked terrific ultimately at the end of the game. But, you know, first half was close. They got the early goal from Costa. Good finish as well. Good build-up, good cross from Correa. Then Sal misses a penalty. It was tight going into at half-time, just the one goal. In the second half, an early goal from Correa, and then, you know, Felix gets his goal and then Suarez comes on and it becomes the Suarez and Llorente show. So they've got a fantastic squad.
Let's crack on and do Barcelona, shall we? So crisis club, as I said, tongue-in-cheek in the intro, because all of the talk, obviously with Luis Suarez having scored the goals, having been allowed to go on a free transfer, the story is written for them to play badly against Villarreal and get an absolute hammering, but far from it. But the story instead of all the money that they've spent in recent years is that the kid from the academy who they're struggling to keep is Ansu Fati, scores two goals. Messi scores as well, particularly the first half, a very emphatic advantage over Villarreal. 4-0 up at the break. They got lots of players on. We saw Coutinho play for 70 minutes. We saw Pjanic play. So it was, you know, suddenly all smiles again at Barcelona.
Yeah. I mean, it was Fati's performance was brilliant. And he continues to shine, doesn't he? You know, whether it's for Barcelona, whether it's for Spain, the national team. He's going to be a superstar. There's no doubting about that. You look at him and forget he's 17. Hmm. And he doesn't, I'm not saying he looks physically older than 17, but he's just been around for a year and that he plays with such maturity. And, you know, I've said it before on the podcast, you can't knock him off the ball. He's a kid. But, you know, physical defenders, they try to get close to him, but he has the strength to hold them off. And most importantly, he has that beautiful balance, the skill. He's, you know, the impudence that comes with being young as well, where he's willing to take on defenders. He makes the right decisions as well, which is not easy for a 17-year-old. My opinion, I think he's going to be an absolute superstar. So it's critical that Barcelona makes sure that he's happy and he's kept at the club, because he you know, I think he's got every chance of being the next big thing in world football. So brilliant performance from him. Good performance from Barcelona in the first half. Drastically terrible performance from Villarreal. Wrong tactics, wrong team selection. And you could see that Emery realised his mistake when he changed it up at half-time. But I thought they were good opponents for Barcelona in that game. I actually thought before going into the game, despite all Barcelona's troubles, when I saw the team selection from Villarreal and the tactics he was going to use, I thought Barcelona by three goals. And they ended up four by half-time. So, you know, they were good opponents for a Barcelona team finding their way with a new manager and slightly different style of football in terms of the double pivot in midfield as opposed to just Busquets on his own. But no, I thought Barcelona, in the first half in particular, were terrific, took their foot off the pedal in the second half. Villarreal tightened things up a little bit more. So it was all about the first half for Barcelona and plenty to admire, and even down to Pjanic coming on. You know, he's a player, I have to be honest, I've seen him in Champions League football and stuff like that. But when he came on, he made the game look easy. Don't think he gave away possession. And it was good to, you know, run out for him just to get used to playing for Barcelona with his new teammates. And he looks to be a good sign as well. I know he's got a good reputation. I've seen enough of him in Champions League football to know he's a good player. But we're going to see lots more of him now in Barcelona shirt.
I'm interested in your verdict, Terry, on another couple of individuals as well. Coutinho.
Yep, I think he did enough, and his performance is playing in his best position. I mean, he was playing the start of the game. He was playing just off of Messi, and it was interesting the rotation, to be honest. And he, at times, him and Fati swapped positions, Griezmann and Messi swapped positions. But what was promising was there was always someone in those positions. So there was always someone on the left, someone on the right, someone up front, someone playing just behind. So they did well to keep their shape. Because in recent seasons, that hasn't been the case. You know, if Messi's wandered off, there's been no one on the right. If, you know, if Coutinho, when he was at Barcelona before, if he wandered off from where he was playing on the left wing, if he wandered off, there was no one on the left. So when you lose the ball, you're not in a position of, you're not organised enough to try and win it back. But what Barcelona did was they always had someone in those positions. That was their starting positions. Messi up front, Coutinho deeper, Griezmann on the right, Fati on the left. But they swapped about, which would cause teams problems. But there was always someone in those positions to keep their shape. So when they lost the ball, they looked sharp last night when they were winning it back. And Coutinho, you know, was part of that. So I think it was a decent performance from him. It can't have been easy. You know, you go for massive money. You don't expect them to be going out on loan. Then you don't expect to be winning the Champions League, knocking your parent club out in the semi-final and scoring two goals. And then within 2 or 3 weeks, you're back training again and looking forward to a new season back at your original club. So it can't have been easy for him. I'm sure he has been gloating, but it would have been tempting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought he fitted in well again.
Quite good for the confidence, I guess, isn't it, to have been part of that? Even if, as you say, obviously, I think it's probably taboo to gloat about it, isn't it? Messi performance then. He seemed to be happy. He seemed to be smiling. If you hadn't noticed, if you hadn't been following the events of the summer, you might not have known that there was too much wrong. So what's the verdict on his performance?
I thought he was a million miles away from being physically what he wants to be. You could see that in the first half. He made a few runs and then he struggled on 2 or 3 occasions to get back up the pitch. But he was showing plenty of endeavour in joining in with the group and trying to win the ball back quickly. So I think there's a little bit of work to do. He obviously missed a little bit of training, didn't he? Mm-hmm. So he was a little bit off the pace physically. But, you know, I agree with you. There was enough, you know, he looked like he was enjoying his football. His competitive spirit and mentality will kick in. You know, he's not going to be thinking about, sorry. He's not going to be thinking about where he's going to be next or if he's going to be anywhere else. He just wants to make sure that he's part of a winning team at Barcelona. That's what's hacked him off more than anything else. So, no, I thought he did all right. I thought he's more to come, but he did okay.
When I reflect back on the whole, is he going to Man City saga, I wonder how it could have ever come about, because I can't help thinking, well, hang on, if they were going to pay him anywhere near what Barcelona are paying him, first of all, where would the money have come from? Now, okay, so the owners are very, very rich, but with financial fair play restrictions and them being watched like a hawk, where were they going to find that money within the FFP framework? And why aren't they spending it now, Man City? I just look back and I think, was it ever reasonably going to happen? I suppose they would have just found a way of doing it if he was free.
Yeah, I think that was the big telling point, wasn't it, that when they thought he was free. I mean, we're not privy to what happened. I mean, so much speculation, wasn't there? But I think if he was free transfer, it was going to be tempting for 2 or 3 of the richest clubs in the world. And Manchester City fall into that category. So I don't think it came close. As soon as I realised that he wasn't going to get a free transfer, I thought it was dead in the water, to be honest.
Yeah.
And it was clear then that he was going to have to stay at Barcelona and earn £1 million a week.
Yeah, struggle by.
Yeah. But no, I thought his performance was acceptable. It wasn't one of his best, but it doesn't have to be. His team won 4-0, and I thought he was just looked a little bit short of match fitness. But that'll come pretty quick. They have another game midweek, another game next weekend. He's away on international duty, so within, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, he'll be back up to full speed. But I thought he looked like he enjoyed, you know, his team's performance last night, and he was still a big part of the thrashing they gave Villarreal in the first half.
It was good to have all the big three involved again, wasn't it, in La Liga. I know Real Madrid had played before, but so they were involved in a very exciting, controversial game against Betis. Real Madrid took the lead. Betis came from behind with 2-1 up. An own goal. So Emerson scored the own goal. Emerson got sent off, and then a Sergio Ramos penalty. So an awful lot, Terry, was said about the VAR. As I said at the beginning, I can't complain about any of the offside decisions because I think anything where you have to draw the lines, I think is onside. I think there should be a lot more slack given in the VAR era to strikers because I think that's where the advantage should be. So I suppose then you're looking at the penalty given against Bartra. Now, the referee didn't give it in real time. Was it a huge mistake? If so, I can understand the unhappiness from Betis's point of view there, but I didn't think it was a major scandal.
No, I thought Emerson's sending off was correct. He was already booked anyway, so even if it was in a straight red, definitely a second yellow, so they can't complain about that. The offsides, I mean, Real Madrid had one disallowed in the first half for offside as well. So I agree with you. I think the penalty, in my opinion, I thought there was a nudge from Mayoral on Bartra, which meant that he fell down and fell onto the ball, and it did hit his arm. So I actually was surprised. I thought the referee, once he'd seen it on the monitor, would see the nudge, make Bartra fall onto the ball, and then it struck his arm. So, I mean, there's no doubt it hits his arm. And as we know now, that's an offence and a penalty. But I thought it was a nudge from Mayoral, but not hugely, you know, controversial. My problem is, in that game, we had a number of VAR incidents in the second half. And I think it sucked the life out of the game because in the first half, it was brilliant. You know, end-to-end attack, both teams playing attacking football, as Real Madrid always do. They try to win all their games, whether they're at home or away. Betis were fantastic as well. So many good, skillful players on show. And yet the second half was stop-start, and it was mainly down to VAR. And that was a number of the games of the weekend. I agree with you. When I see an offside, if the camera angle is good on television, I can look at it in a split second. We all can, and go, he's off. Once you start getting those lines, and we get them, when we get the proof, we get them for 5 seconds at the most. And when you look at some of them, you think, well, that line is not in line. The pink line isn't in line where the attacking player's foot, shoulder, chest, head, whatever. It's not in line. That could be slightly over. The defender's line is slightly out with the defender as well. And then it's gone. So I think once if we don't need the lines, you know, if, as long as the camera angles are okay, we can all see when we see an action replay, if it's a clear offside, we can tell. As soon as they're pretty level and the lines are coming out, I think that's when it should be done away with. I really do. Because you joked about the Athletic Bilbao Eibar game. It was 10 minutes in the second half. And that game had the life sucked out of it from VAR. There was goals being scored. No one knew whether to celebrate or not. There was goals scored and they were celebrating and it was disallowed. There was a incident towards the end of the game where Pape Diop made a challenge on the player who was on the floor. I can't remember the player that was down on the floor. The referee stopped it then. The game was over by then. It was the 99th minute or something. And we had another 3-minute delay for the referee to see whether it was a yellow or a red card. And it just went, it just drags the, for me, it sucks the life out of the game when we have those VAR stoppages for 3 or 4 minutes, everyone's standing around. If you get 2, 3, 4 of those in a half, it kills the game.
Yeah.
That's just my
big problem. Law enforcers should not be lawmakers. It's a simple matter of principle that because they're just looking at the wrong things. Look, it's all about the ease, the convenience for the officials, and it's all wrong. Anyway,
they're trying to find stuff, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're looking for stuff. There are goals disallowed where players don't even appeal against.
Yeah, so
I'm not saying that's a way of judging whether it should be a goal or not, but we know by and large that if players have got some idea of a goal should be disallowed, there's appeals and whatever. But sometimes there aren't any appeals and the referees, it looks like every goal has to be checked.
Yeah.
And, you know, like in the NFL, the touchdowns, every touchdown has to be checked. But in football, it's We're waiting now, aren't we? You see managers not celebrating on the bench because they're thinking, well, is it going to be allowed? On pretty much every goal that everybody scores, there is some sort of weird reaction to it that people don't know if it's going to be allowed or not. So we've really got to be careful that we don't take that emotion out of the game of that passion and that split second when a team does something good and then you're all waiting around waiting to see if it's going to be allowed or not. Finding it really frustrating.
Yeah, so let's crack on and talk about the football, shall we? Tell us about the game. Tell us about where both teams are at.
But I think Betis are in good shape, and I think they can be. You know, they're frustrated with the scoreline, of course, and the result. But they did enough to suggest that they're going to be far better than they were last season. And for Real Madrid, it was interesting to see Jovic get an opportunity. I have to be honest, he didn't grab it. But that's not me being critical of him. That was his fifth start in La Liga for Real Madrid. He gets one chance, and the next day the papers are hammering him. They want him gone. They want to keep Mayoral. The stories are that Zidane was trying them both out, which one he was going to keep, which one he wasn't. Imagine playing, if you're Jovic, I mean, he's only 22. And he's playing for Real Madrid, and he knows every time he gets an opportunity, and then months apart when he starts a game, that it could be his last chance to play with that noose around your neck every time you pull on the shirt of Real Madrid. It isn't fair. So I have to be honest, he didn't make the most of the opportunity, but I'm not surprised, if I'm being brutally honest. I think that it might be too far gone for him now to resurrect any sort of career at Real Madrid. So, you know, we still haven't seen a lot of him, so I can't judge him. And you know, I was looking forward to a young talent coming to La Liga when he joined Real Madrid for big money. But we haven't seen much of him. And now I just think that, you know, it's probably beyond him to turn it around. And you know, I fear that he probably will move on either on loan or if they can get the cash for him, that they'll probably sell him and move him on now. But I thought Courtois was good in goal. He made some good saves. It was, you know, Modric came on for Kroos and still looked fantastic. So again, I think they're in decent shape, Real Madrid, and interesting to see Zidane give another opportunity to Odegaard and, you know, to try a different system. So, you know, he's a flexible manager with a bunch of versatile players that are all intelligent, know what they're doing. And at the moment, they know how to win games. You know, even if it's a tight affair like it was, they still managed to find a way to come out on top. And Ramos scoring for his 17th season on the trot in La Liga, which is an incredible statistic.
Yeah, very impressive. How tell us how they tactically used Odegaard.
Well, he played him just behind the front. So it's quite ironic, really, that he's had a number of players over the years. James never got the opportunity to play there under Zidane. Isco has never played there under Zidane. And yet Odegaard has come back from an impressive loan at Real Sociedad, really impressive loan at Real Sociedad. And Zidane quite fancies now the idea of a player playing. He tried it once or twice at the end of the season after lockdown. And a couple of times it was Modric who played there. Who played off the striker. It might be Hazard is another player that could do that job. So I think it's a case of having to look at Odegaard. He's going to keep him this season, of course, and he's going to play. But I think it's a case of having to look at that position to see how it functions. And he, as I said, that could be Odegaard playing there, it could be Isco playing there, it could be Hazard playing there. So there was that was the tactics that they used, the tactics that Zidane used. Felt Valverde was probably the best player. So again, another asset to the starting 11. Toni Kroos picked up an injury, so Valverde is going to be important again, as he was last season in the season that they won the league. So another good young player. So we're talking about, you know, Felix, Valverde. We've got Vinicius and Rodrigo at Real Madrid, Fati at Barcelona. Pedri came in as a sub. The good thing about the weekend's football that we've seen was the amount of young players that are breaking through into not just La Liga, but the big clubs.
Right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the rest of La Liga. Welcome back. back to Eltel and John's La Liga Weekly. Don't forget the Patreon page, a new feature that allows you to give us money to talk about Spanish football. Thank you very much if you are thinking of getting involved. So it's patreon.com, Eltel, E-L-T-E-L, is the name of our page. We will start putting some content on there. There are different tiers. We will give some thought to what we do. Initially, we'll just be chucking some new stuff on there and having chats and interaction with people as well. So check that out, and that would be really kind of you. Thank you. Right, Cadiz are up in La Liga, and they were beaten by Sevilla, but they're no pushovers. It took the substitutions from Lopetegui for Sevilla to come through. But Sevilla, Terry, as we know, were a resilient and well-coached team themselves.
Yeah, and another one of those rubbish players that Barcelona are desperate to get rid of scores a goal. So it worked out well for everyone this weekend. Barcelona got players off their wage bill. Suarez gets a couple of goals, so it's worked out well for him. And Rakitic found himself playing in the European Super Cup last week and scoring for Sevilla at the weekend. It was an impressive performance, I thought, because it was an impressive performance against Bayern Munich as well. It went to extra time. One or two players were rested. Of course, Navas wasn't. He played the 120 minutes against Bayern and then was up and down the pitch for the 90-odd minutes against Cadiz. But there was one or two rested, and they had to use the bench. They've got a fantastic bench. They had to use it. It was a weird game because, I mean, they were caught napping for the goal just after the start of the second half. But up until that point, they were in control. They were comfortable. The possession stats, 76% to Sevilla, 24% to Cadiz. Cadiz are a weird team. They by design, I'm not sure it's by design, but they, even in the win against Huesca the week before, they barely had any of the ball. But they're not a team that sit deep. They just don't seem to get a lot of possession, particularly in the attacking half. But what they have been is been efficient. I think they had one chance in that game and took it. Against Huesca, they had a couple of chances and took them. So I do worry for Cadiz, I must be honest. I could understand if they were a type of team that was playing that way on purpose, but I don't think they are. I think they're genuinely trying their best, but just don't get much of the ball and they can't keep it. But from Sevilla's point of view, they had to work hard. They had to come from behind. As you said, the subs. And isn't it pleasing to see, we talk about being patient with players, but De Jong is actually looking the real deal now, isn't he? I mean, he's running the Europa League. His form in that was good. And then his goal at the weekend was a classic. If anyone's seen it, it's a classic traditional centre-forwards header. Great work from Navas to get the cross in. He pulls away and in full stretch generates real power on the header to equalise. And from then on, it was just a question of could Cadiz hold on to a point and could Sevilla go on and win it? And another player that I'm surprised, who's... I think his form has been excellent for Sevilla in the last year or so. Yet again, for some reason, when play resumed after the lockdown, he found himself on the bench, and that was Munir. Lost his place to Suso. At the moment, I still think that Munir offers more than Suso. So it was a surprise when Suso was starting in those Europa League games, all the way through to the final. Munir was coming off the bench. It's a surprise now that Munir is still on the bench, because I think he could be a really decisive player for Sevilla. So he comes on, scores a goal with the pass of the weekend from Jean Jourdain. If you see it in the replay from certain angles, you can see Juan Carla is going to his left because that's where Jourdain is looking. And he just gives him the eyes and plays it down the middle of the pitch. And Munir's through on goal and scores. Then he breaks through again and sets one up for Rakitic, which took, again, another VAR to go back. That took about 3 or 4 minutes at the end of the game. The 93rd minute to decide whether it's a goal or not. I saw that in 10 seconds on a replay. It was clear. There was two incidents. Was Munir onside? Yes. Was Rakitic onside? Yes. Goal. It took ages again. I thought an impressive performance from Sevilla on the back of playing against the best opposition there is to play against in Europe, in Bayern Munich, and then coming back and having to come back from behind to defeat a stubborn, determined, pretty well-organised Cadiz, and they had to use their bench. So, no, it was an excellent result for Sevilla.
Where should we go to next? Let's do Valencia. Always something to say about Valencia. So they're up against Huesca. They got away with it in a way, didn't they? Valencia got a 1-1 draw, a Vas free kick that he didn't intend to go into the goal. So where is poor old Javi Gracia? He doesn't seem very happy.
I don't blame him. They're dire at the moment, Valencia. I mean, it's hard to see a sort of silver lining for them because, yep, they got the draw. I mean, we shouldn't be talking about them being grateful for getting a draw. They were outplayed from first minute to last. Huesca had more possession, more attempts on goal, and just generally all the way through the game looked the far better team. And this is a team that's newly promoted who lost to Cadiz the week before at home. And they went there and totally outplayed Valencia. So they need some reinforcements. There's no doubt about that. Hard push to find any player of Valencia at the weekend that played well. I thought Uras Rasic in midfield was okay. He hasn't played many games for Valencia. He's a new player. Him and Condogbia look okay. They look pretty decent in midfield. But the rest of them, Gaia was slightly below par, but one of their better players. Guedes, we're not seeing an improvement from him. Barely saw Maxi Gomez, and the rest of them, you can see Javi Gracia is just trying all sorts to, with not many players, to try and find a team that's going to be competitive, because at the moment, they're not going to threaten the European spot next season at all. They're nowhere near that level, and they were grateful they didn't lose this game. Huesca were much better. I mean, we spoke last week on the podcast, didn't we, about teams playing out the back, and I've watched some of the Premier League stuff. It's a huge difference, you know, between the Premier League and Spanish football in that it's primarily a Premier League issue, I think, with the teams playing out the back. When I watch the Premier League...
Who aren't good enough to do it.
Well, no, I just think that every team it looks the same. Every team, the short goal kicks, no one takes a long goal kick in the Premier League. I mean, I might be wrong. There might be, you know, I've watched the highlights programmes, I've watched a couple of live games, but...
Wondering about Burnley, but yeah.
I suppose, but the rest of them, they all look the same. When I was watching the games, making a point of watching the games and thinking, right, who does it? Huesca do it a bit. Real Sociedad do it. And there was Elche, of all teams, doing it. But the rest, it's not obvious that it's something they have to do all the time. Of course, the other teams do it. Betis do it, Barcelona, Real Madrid, they do it when it's the right time. But even Barcelona didn't do it as much. But I think that's because Neto was more pragmatic than Ter Stegen. So it's Huesca do play out the back. They get it into midfield. They play some good football. They brought on some younger players towards the end. Javi Ontiveros has gone there on loan now. So I think that's a decent signing for them. A player that Villarreal shouldn't have let go, in my opinion. He's a player they own. And they brought Kubo in. And which means now they've got Kubo on loan from Real Madrid, and they've let one of their youngsters they bought from Malaga, good promising youngster who did well last season, they've let him go out on loan to Huesca. So I think Huesca, out of the three that have come up, I know we've only seen Elche briefly, but I think Huesca, on their performance against Valencia, look as if they can find a way to create one or two more chances, take those chances, then I think they've got the best chance of surviving this year in the top flight.
Shall we talk about Elche then, beaten 3-0 at home by Real Sociedad? It was the first time we've seen them this season, wasn't it? I mean, weird times, weird that they start the season this late, but there we are, that's the circumstances. And a difficult game, of course, against a good team in Real Sociedad who won fair and square.
Yeah, again, it took Real Sociedad a while to break them down. I think it was quite promising from Elche, to be honest. I think they signed five new players last week to take their tally up to 17 professionals. So, you know, it's been a month since they got promoted. The manager's gone. New manager's come in. They wasn't disastrous. 3-0 was about a fair scoreline, but it was 0-0 for a large part of the game, well into the second half, before Porto got the breakthrough. Then Yanazai got involved, took a penalty and scored. Roberto Lopez with a great goal, great strike towards the end. Another sub that came on. So the subs helped Real Sociedad. Unfortunately for Elche, you know, two of the new players were on the bench. They were playing without a recognised striker because one of the new players only joined, you know, not long before the game. So it was a tough start for Elche. But as I say, they played a 5-4-1 system. So it's frustrating for Real Sociedad to break them down. They didn't have any obvious striker on the pitch. I mean, they lost the fullback, I think it was Cifuentes, early in the game after 30 minutes, and they brought on Nino, the 40-year-old striker. So he was the lone striker, and he did all right, to be honest, John. He puts himself about, still got some pace. He knows what he's doing. He's backing into players and stuff like that. But because he was the only striker up front, they never had an out ball, so they were almost forced into playing those out from the back through the goalkeeper, playing short, and that was a little bit of a failure in this game because at times they 4, 5, 6 passes dispossessed, then even got across the halfway line and they were under pressure again. So I think there's hope for Elche because it was their first game, and as I said, the 5 new players have got to take a little while to bed in. But it is no doubt it's going to be a tough season.
Okay, let's rattle through, shall we? So there was a Basque derby. There are lots of Basque derbies these days. So, and Eibar don't have any Basque players in their team, I believe. I'm right in saying. Then Athletic came through. Iñaki Williams can't score a legitimate goal anyway. But Unai Lopez got a couple and a victory for Athletic.
Yeah, Unai Lopez was great, and it's part of the game that he needs to add to, because there still isn't going to be a recognised goal scorer that's going to get them bundles of goals. So they're going to need a player like him, you know, to join him with the goals from midfield. And the fact he did that the weekend, the first time he's got 2 goals in a game, I'm not sure he's got that many goals for Athletic Club anyway, but it was a solid performance. It was a scrappy, there was lots of second balls, possession was shed out evenly. And it was, you know, Athletic just took their chances better than Eibar. Kike Garcia scored, but he missed another couple. And it looks like it's going to be a tough season for Mendilibar and Eibar, if I'm being perfectly honest. They're a team I spoke about before the season that they might struggle because they brought too many in. That's still the case. Kevin Rodriguez has come in, the player on loan from Real Sociedad. It was at Leganés last season to cover the injury of Jose Engel, who's going to be out for the majority of the season. So it was a hard-fought encounter. I thought Athletic just had that little bit more quality in the attacking half of the pitch. Williams was a threat with his pace. Mignon was far too quiet. Raul Garcia played deeper. Williams actually played up front as the lead point of the attack. But I thought that there's obviously room for improvement for Athletic Bilbao. But it's a tough game, you know. Basque derby away, Eibar, you know what sort of game it's going to be. Eibar certainly didn't play at the back. They're not one of those teams, that's for sure. Nor Athletic.
So, I mean, you mentioned all the youngsters coming through, Terry, but once again, we are looking at a few of the old dad's army of La Liga doing well. Amongst that number, Jose Luis Morales, who is such a fascinating player, isn't he? You know, he's late on the scene, semi-pro footballer into his mid-20s. But what a player he is, and crucial in Levante's win at Osasuna.
Oh, and they were so good. Levante, they were terrific in that game. They really were. They play some lovely football, and not surprised to see them go away from home against a team that, again, you know, well coached, well organised, hard to break down, hard to beat. And Levante fully deserved that win. It was an emphatic win. Morales, it seemed like he had a year off last season, didn't it? He was well below his best, and you kind of wondered whether at the age of 32 last season it was, you know, he was just slowing down a touch. But no, at the age of 33, he still looks brilliant, and he's great to watch. I mean, they deserved that win. Malero played as the second striker. He got the first goal. Roger Marti missed the penalty shortly after coming off the bench. He's back from injury as well now, so he's an asset to them. And you look at the other players in the team, they had an interesting player called Mikael Mousa, who came in. And he's a new signing, I think, coming in from the second division. Might be Mirandes. And he played well in that sort of central midfield position in the 4-4-2. Campagna was good. Ennis Bardi was lively, so it was a thoroughly deserved win for Levante, who, as I say, on their day, and thankfully they have quite a few of those, they're a really good watch.
And another one of the kids coming through, Iago Aspas, with the goal for Celta Vigo before Valladolid, though they're no pushovers, and again, they're get themselves organised in match situations where it doesn't seem as if it's going for them. They've got the resilience.
Yeah, and I like Valladolid. I like watching them, actually. I think they're well organised. It's quite a basic system of play. At the moment, they're suffering because they haven't got anyone else to play up front with. Sergi Guardiola, he's another one of those players, John, that came in late. I look at him now, he's 29. He's good with both feet, primarily left-footed, good with both feet, good in the air, good aggression. He's got a cocky little attitude where he's got that little bit of arrogance. I look at him and I think, why did it take him till 27, 28 to make it into the top division? I mean, if he was 3 or 4 years younger now, I've no doubt that he would be a real asset to, with all due respect, and people on the podcast know what we mean by that. It does mean I'm being disrespectful to Valladolid. My apologies, Valladolid. But he, you know, you feel he could play at a high level. So I like watching Valladolid. And Celta, I have to be honest, were disappointing again. And I thought Valladolid should have won the game. They brought in a young player, Marcos Andre. And big 23-year-old. And just his sheer presence meant they went back to the 4-4-2. And for the last 20 minutes or so, they were the team that were trying to win the game. Celta chopped and changed their system, but 1-0 up, they tried to defend it, brought one extra midfield players, took a striker off, and they were holding on to the 1-0. And then, you know, once it went to 1-1, Valladolid looked the more likely team to win it. Interesting goal from Aspas on his right foot, round the goalkeeper, on the byline. Somehow he squeezes it in, and I was surprised that Bruno, the central defender who was there to clear, he was frightened to touch it in case it was an own goal. So he just left it and it went in. You can see Roberto Jimenez, the goalkeeper, saying, what are you doing? You know, so it was, but no, Valladolid at least deserved a draw. And possibly, in my opinion, they were unlucky not to win that game in the end.
And so, Terry, we've saved ourselves a treat all that, haven't we? Alaves 0, Getafe 0.
That's it. Basically, that is it. And thankfully, the weekend got better. That was the first game of the weekend. Early kickoff on Saturday. Getafe should have won. They were the only team trying to win it. Alaves are going to try and draw their way through and be hard to beat, hard to break down. They're not going to be great to watch at the moment. Whether that will change, you know, once the managers had time to settle in, Pablo Machin. But at the moment, it doesn't look anything but it's going to be backs to the wall stuff for Alaves to try and maintain, you know, the status in the top flight. But I think Getafe will be disappointed they didn't take all points from that game. Again, same players were good. Cucurella was good. Enizuno came on for Mata at half time, didn't make a great deal of difference. So I think it's one or two new players at Getafe, but by and large, it's the same set of players. And I still expect Getafe to push in and be top half at the very least this year.
What have you made of the five subs returning, Terry, in the games that you've been watching so far?
I'm not a fan of it, but I understand it. I understand it for this season. I'm surprised the Premier League haven't done it, seeing as it's going to be involved in all the other leagues in Europe. International matches going to be involved in European competitions as well. Because of this congested season, I mean, some of the clubs are playing a ridiculous amount of games. Granada they're not taking part in the midweek round of league fixtures because they've got another European qualifier. So I think that the games are coming a lot faster than we all imagined. I mean, in the Premier League, for instance, Tottenham are playing Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, if the game against Dorian and being called off. And I don't think people, sort of had that in their minds when we were starting the new season, how different this season is going to be. So I think that I would like to have seen, if I'm being honest, a three sub rule and then maybe injuries on if someone does pick up an injury, something where there was an emergency, you know, one or two subs. Because again, I talked about VAR sucking the life out of the game. If you get 10 subs in one half of football, that breaks the game down as well. Now, if both teams,
yeah, that's why the Premier League didn't go for it, isn't it? I don't think I think if I'm right, it's only three subs in the Nations League as well.
I think the European club competitions are five again, aren't they, as well?
Yeah.
So yeah. I just think when you do get games, you know, everyone knows I'm doing these reports, and you do notice it when you're writing down sub after sub after sub, and you look and you go, that was 10 subs used in one half of football.
Yeah, and it's a pain to commentate on. I know there are bigger things in the world at the moment than worrying about football commentators, but it is.
I would imagine the Levante kit was a bit of a nightmare, especially in the sunshine as well, which we get in the early kickoffs in Spain. If you're a commentator, we've done them in the past, when we were working together at Sky, and you get that early kickoff and it's brilliant sunshine and the numbers are not great, and you it's really hard to pick out off tube, off a monitor when you're doing those early kickoffs. So no, yeah, I agree with you. Anything to help the commentators, I'm more than happy to go along with.
Yes. And on that note, don't forget the Patreon page, everybody. Right. Well, Terry, thank you very much. Everybody enjoy your La Liga in the coming days. Thank you for listening. And don't forget the Patreon page. So patreon.com/ anyway you like, LTEL. And we'll be podcasting as normal again soon. Bye-bye.